My name is Bernard McNavoe. I'm a part-time lecturer at the history of, at the University of Central Lancashire, and this is interview 3 of the Frenchwood Oral History Project. The subject today is
Teresa O'Neill.
And where were you born, Teresa?
I was born in number 12 Paradise Street in Preston.
Whereabouts in Preston
just,
is that?
Just off Manchester Road.
Is it in the Frenchwood area?
Well, it's virtually, yes, just about.
Okay. When were you born?
23rd of October, that was 23/10/1921.
What was the name of your father?
James Cooper.
And can you remember his date and place of birth?
No, not really, no. I know he was born in Preston. I'm not sure if he was born in St. Ignatius Parish.
Okay, then. What was his occupation?
He was a builder. All his family were builders. His dad, which was my grandfather, they had a big workyard in Paradise Street, R. Cooper and Sons, and there was 5 sons that they all worked for the granddad, my granddad, his dad. So there was James, my daddy was the oldest, there was James, Albert, he worked in the office, there was the other one, me, James, Albert, Rafe, he was one, he worked for them, oh these are all brothers, Lawrence, Joe, he was a plasterer, Joe, Robert, Bob, Uncle Bob, and my auntie Florence, she worked in the office. They were all brothers and sisters. They only had that one sister. And they employed somewhere around about 5-6 men who lived in the backs, at all, in the streets just behind. It was a big concern. And I was born there at number 12, where the big yard was, where we all lived.
Okay. Can you remember the age of your father when he died?
He was coming up 74. That's all. 74.
And can you remember when he died? What date?
Oh.
Year?
18th of April it was. I can't remember the year. It's a long time ago. It's 30 odd years ago.
Okay. Sometime in the 1970s.
And my mother died shortly after. He died in the April, and my mother died in the December. She was 71.
Okay, what was the name of your mother?
Anne Bentley.
Can you recall her date and place of birth?
No, not really, no. I only remember them all living in Silver Street, right next to the church in St. Austin's Place.
Okay.
And that's where I used to go to, and that's where my mother was married from.
Can you remember her age when she married? Do you know what her age was?
I think she was around about 24. 23, 24, something like that. My dad wouldn't have been much different. 25, 26. He was about 3 years older. He might have been about 27.
Did your mother work before being married?
Yeah, she was a post lady. She worked for the post office. And she used to go out delivering letters. And she did that during the war as well.
Did she work after she was married?
Only for a short time, because by this time my brother was born in 1918, just before the end of the war. And she was working virtually up to him being born.
What about your brothers and sisters? Did you?
I only had one brother, it was just my brother Ralph and me.
Okay then. Is he still alive?
No, he died somewhat 18 years ago. 20 years ago, somewhere.
Can you remember anything about your grandparents?
My grandparents on my mother's side. My grandfather, he was a tailor. Don't know who he worked for, but he worked for some big firm in town, and he made suits and, you know, clothes. He was a tailor. And I remember he made my mother's wedding dress, which was a little bit unusual in those days, yeah.
What about your grandmother? Can you remember anything?
I don't know what she did, but of course there was a few girls. There was two boys and four girls in my in their side of the family, my mother's side of the family. And most of them worked in the mill. And the two brothers, they were both in the First World War.
Did they all come from Preston on your mother's side?
Yes, as far as I know.
What about your father's parents?
As far as I know, they were always in Preston.
Okay. When you were growing up, what type of house was it that you lived in?
Well, I lived at the workyard, which was a biggish house, really, because my grandma, the Coopers, lived in that house, and then they moved down to Frenchwood. And when they moved to Frenchwood, my mother and my dad and my brother moved into this house in Paradise Street, and I was born at number 12 Paradise Street. It was quite a nice house. We had a parlour, as we used to call it, parlour. There was three bedrooms. We had a small bathroom, but the outside toilet. Nobody had a toilet in the house in those days. It was all outside in the backyard. And everybody had a chamber pot from under the bed. Everybody did. It was quite, nobody ever had a bathroom, a toilet in the house. That was unheard of.
How many bedrooms were there? Can you remember?
I think there would be three. There were three bedrooms. And then over the years, as I say, we lived in the workyard. We had big gates, because we had a big wagon and a lot of hand trucks. And over the top, there was an empty room. And they made another room. We took another room over. They made it into another room that we had. So we had a playroom as well. We were one of the lucky ones. We had a playroom as well. So there was still a big bedroom over the workyard and the other three bedrooms besides, plus the playroom.
Was it rented or owned?
Oh, no. No, it belonged to the Coopers. My grandfather was pretty well off. Well, he worked for his money. He had to work jolly hard for the money. But he did have, as I said, they had this nice house and all these men working for him. It was quite a big concern. In fact, one of the pubs in town, they used to have a billhead in a frame at the Britannia pub in town. You know, is it the Great, what's it called? Something Britannia? In town, anyway, it's just up Freigate. Is it Freigate? Yeah. It's in there. It's on the wall. Well, it was. This billhead of R. Cooper and Sons. And this little billhead was all marked out, how much down to the last penny. And it's told cost, you know. And I thought that was really something to look at when we've gone in it, you know. Yeah.
Did you have your own bedroom or did you share with anyone?
No, I did over the years. I shared with my brother as we were little, and then I had my own bedroom. We all had our own bedrooms.
So what about the area that you lived in? Can you describe that area?
It was quite nice. Most people were like good working class people. We were right facing, we lived in Paradise Street, which was run off Queen Street, straight across Manchester Road. Continuation was Paradise Street. We lived roughly halfway down. Opposite to us, it was Walton Street that ran down into Sykehill, Avenham Lane. And on the, as we stood at my front door, looking down, on that side, on the left, there was a long wall, and it was Patrick Kilraw, and he sold, I think it was a pork butcher, and that was it. And he had that place, so whether he killed in there, I'm not sure, But we used to play ball against his wall. Used to play ball, you know, bouncing the ball on this work wall. It was a great big long yard. So because we couldn't get into it, it was very, very high. And we presume that he had a roof to it, because if he had any animals in there that he was killing, because he was a pork butcher. And the same man, he was a very generous man, and I believe he used to go around town, and any of the poor that he could see, the nothing, he used to put his hand in his pocket and give them hands full of money. He was a very, very, a good living Christian man.
Mm. What about other local shops? Can you remember other local shops in the area?
Yeah, well, we had a toffee shop just on my road in Paradise Street. There was a sweet shop there. Right opposite was Howell's shop, Rab Howell, and he sold vegetables. And on the corner of the street, there was a barber's shop. And we used to go in there, on this barber's shop, when we were little. And if I went to get my hair cut, you know, straight, what we used to say, like a straight bob, you know, and he put a piece of wood on the chair, and then he'd lift us up and sit on it while he cut with fringe and tidied up with hair, you know. On the other corner, which these two corners, mind you, they were parting Manchester Road, and the other corner, the shop was here. Next to it, there was a big cake shop, Summer's Cake Shop, which was a homemade cakes and, you know, whatever bread. And next door, this is now in Manchester Road, there was a very tiny paper shop, and they sold all these evening post and whatever there was going, and little magazines and comics. We used to get a Friday penny, and we'd get the comics. I can't remember the name of them now. There were two or three comics that we used to get every week. That was with our like Friday penny, which was good. Can't remember the name of them. Sometime perhaps. Across the road, where the cake shop was on the corner, across the road, opposite to the cake shop, there was a pub, of course. There's always a pub. There was a pub on the corner of Queen Street and Manchester Road. Then next door, there was a chip shop, Ballard's chip shop. Next door to that, there was a grocer's shop, where you can buy, all, you know, general grocery store. The end, next to it, at the end, which ran up to another street, there was this old, we used to call it lamp oil shop, and they sold pots and pans and that kind of stuff, you know, hardware. So if you still stay in Manchester Road, going down towards Frenchwood that way, there was another pub a little bit further down. There was a shoemaker's down the step, you can take your shoes and cobbler. Down the step and the cobbler's shop, and then a little bit further on there was Holiness shop, relations. Holiness shop, where they sold all these cakes and bread and vegetables, you know, that was a good shop. Across the road, opposite Holiness, there was a chip shop. Just imagine, there was Ballard shop on one end, and another chip shop at another corner of another street opposite. Then a little bit further down, coming down towards Manchester Road Hill, down, there was a butcher's shop. Butcher's shop. Mr. Hepworth had that butcher's shop. And on the corner of Silver Street into Manchester Road, right on the corner, where the church is now, Silver Street, on that corner, it was an undertaker's. We had an undertaker there. And next door there was a house, two houses up steps. Right next door there's this undertaker on the end, on the corner. Next little bit, at the other side of the street, there was a street running off. There was another toffee shop. There was loads of toffee shops. Three doors past Holiness, opposite, there was a big sweet shop there. And then next door there was a great big pub. It's still there, but it's in the stage, I think, of being pulled down. There was another big pub on the corner, so there was at least three pubs just within, well, I won't say, just not just walking distance. You could nearly reach out and touch it, you know. Yeah, it was good.
It was a self-contained area.
Oh, yes.
In many ways.
Yes, it was. Yes, you know, you can get anything you wanted, roughly, from...
What about playing for children? Where did you play?
We just played in the street. It was safe in those days. You could play outside. We played ball. As I say, we used to play on this wall, play ball against the wall, on old Packhill Rose wall. Hide and seek, we played hopscotch, we made hopscotch on these. Top and whip, shuttlecock, you know. We played all the games. It was, there wasn't as many cars. You see, they were pretty good for cars in those days. And of course there was, I mean, we had a big wagon. But it wasn't as busy. And in the evenings, of course, traffic was down to not very many, just a minimum in those days, because you used to come up Manchester Road or Queen Street, cut across, work the way down into Avenham Lane to go along. So we just played games outside. And some of us had a bike. We used to give our friends bike rides. That was one thing that I do remember. It was Christmas, and I don't know how old I would be. I'm nine-ish, whatever. Anyway, I went to town with my mother to buy me a new bike for Father Christmas to bring for Christmas. And we got it from Mears in town. It's not there now, Mears' shop. Anyway, we went upstairs to have a look at these bikes, and she said, "Who was it for?" And I said, "It's for me." She said, "Have a look up now. Which one would you like?" And I looked and I said, "I want that one." She said, "No, sir, that's a boy's bike." She said, "Is it for you?" I said, "Yes." She said, "Well, these are girls' bags." And I said, "No, I don't want a girl's bag. I want a boy's bag." She said, "But it's for you." I said, "I know. I want a boy's bike. And I want this one." So I got this bike and sat on it for size, you know. And I said, "No, I want this bike." In other words, she couldn't understand this. So she said to my mother, "Are you sure?" So my mother said, "If that's what she wants, that's what she wants." And she said, "Well, like," she said, "why do you want a boy's bike?" I said, "So that I can give rides to my friends." It was simple. That's what you did. You got a boy's bike. There's two of you could have a ride. So, that to me was normal. You got something that you could share. Now, if I had a girl's bike, there'd only be could ride it. Yeah, it was great fun. It was great fun.
Did boys and girls play games together, or did you have a demarcation?
No, girls'
games.
No, we all played together.
So, what about things like skipping?
Oh yeah, we'd all skip along together. Boys would join in, and okay, sometimes the boys will go off and do their own thing, but mainly, no, we'd all join in, and we all played racing games, and yeah, it was a nice way to grow up.
What about relationships with neighbours? What were the neighbours like?
Oh, you got on very nice with your neighbours. You could leave your door open in those days and just say, "I'm just going to such a place," or somebody would come to 2 hours out and say, "Mrs. Cooper, I'm going to the shop. Do you want anything?" And if my mother was busy, "Yes, like me or baby or whatever. Yes," she'd say, "I'll get such a thing for you." And I think it was my brother, she'd just had him. He was just been born at home, of course. And this lady came in. "Mrs. Cooper, how are you?" "I'm all right. Can I get you something? I'm just going to the shop. Can I get you something?" And she said, "Well, I don't know." She said, "I'll get you a nice chop for your tea." My mother paid it for it, like. "I'll get you a nice chop for your tea," right? So, anyway, she came back with this chop, and I don't know who cooked it, I have no idea. Anyway, eventually, so my mother got this chop. There's only one great big snag. It was Friday. and nobody ate meat on Friday. She said, she took a bite of this chop. She said, I was really looking forward to eating this dinner. And she said, I thought, oh no, it's Friday. So she just couldn't eat it. She said, oh, I had to put it away. She said, I managed to eat the potatoes and stuff. She said, I couldn't eat this chop. You can believe it. It doesn't happen today, does it?
Not really, no.
No, it doesn't happen today. Little bits of things like that you suddenly remember.
So it was quite a close-knit community.
Oh, yes. People helped each other. Yes. I had an old, well, it wasn't my aunt. My mother's auntie. We used to call her old Aunt Lizzie, and she used to come round. And she'd come round to get warm. And I can remember long, dark clothes with a shawl tucked round her, you know, and then she'd put it over her head. And my mother would make her a dinner, and she'd give her something to take home for her tea. Or she'd have her tea, and then she'd make us give her something to take home with her. And it seems this old lady, she'd probably be in her 70s, I don't know. I mean, she looked old anyway. They did look old. When you're only a child, everybody looks old. But anyway, I think she might have been around 70 when she died. And she used to come round, and my mother would make her a meal and take it. Now, this same old lady got married at the beginning of the war, and he got killed. And she never got married again. So whatever her work was, she was probably in the weaving shed or something. So she would have to work until she couldn't work anymore. And then she depended on little handouts from her relations. And I took her some food round. And she lived in two little streets further back. And she had a room, one room, in this house. I don't know who it was. And she lived in this one room, a bedroom. There was no heating in those days. She had no heating. She had candles, but she had no heating. There were no fireplace or anything. And she had her bed. My mother used to give her what she could towards her. And that she was wrapped up in blankets and all kinds of top coats and all kinds of stuff in this little cold bedroom. And I remember going round there and taking her a bowl of hot soup or hot pot or something, you know, for an evening meal, because she hadn't been well. Anyway, when she died, my mother and dad, because she used to say, hey Annie, when I die I'll be buried a pauper. And my mother said, no you won't. And she wasn't. My mother and dad bought a grave, and my mother and dad are buried in the same grave with her. But I mean, this was the kind of the way it was. People were nice to each other. Anyone in the street, you know, you could depend on someone. You could say, well, I'm just going to the shop, will you just keep your eye out on kids playing out? And they would. They were a nice community in those days. You could, like I say, you could go out and leave your door open.
Was there a lot of poverty in the area?
Well, it wasn't too bad in my day. People were poor, yes. They were poor, but nobody would admit it. They would never admit that they were. So they weren't too bad. I mean, people were working. Everybody seemed to be able to look after themselves. I mean, in the 1920s, things had improved a bit. They weren't too bad. I suppose there were a lot of poor people. There were some poor people, because my mother used to give them my clothes. A little girl in my class who had nothing, and she'd say, would your mother not mind if I give you these? Now, if it's going to upset you, bring them back. I don't want to. I'm not giving them to you, but, you know, it's only because I don't wear them that she can't wear them anymore. She's grown out. Now, it's all right. I'm not giving them to you for, you need to be very careful how you said it and how you gave, because people would be upset to think that they couldn't afford it. You know, it was that kind of a life, I suppose.
Tell me about, you mentioned all these shops in the area. Mm. Who did the shopping for the family?
I don't know, I suppose everybody just did their own little bit of shopping. Of course, we also went to town. We went on the market and bought a load of whatever, vegetables mainly. And I remember going on the market, would have been Saturday, and they had these little stalls, and there were hot potatoes. I think they're hot potatoes. And black puddings. Oh, yeah, lovely. Black puddings we had, and they were hot. And my mother used to ask for one with plenty of gristle, not gristle, fat in them. And we'd get these hot black puddings, and you could have sauce, you could have mustard on. And sometimes we'd walk round while we were eating these, you know, in your hand. We used to buy a lot of things like tripe and trotters, and that was Saturday. My dad used to go to watch North End, and when he come back home, it was always like tripe and onions, and and Fridays it was, we used to have a man came round, Fish Bob, on his little ocean cart, and he used to have all this fish on, and we'd have various kinds of fish, but I always remember having cockles, and it's a great big dish full of cockles, you know, in the middle of the table, and everybody had a little plate, and you kept taking them out and dipping them in your salt and vinegar and emptying your cockles in your... That was Fridays. Yeah, it was good fun.
What about your clothes? Did you buy them in, or did your mother make them?
We made some, yes. Like my dad, as I say, my granddad was a tailor. And sometimes he would make a little pattern up, you know, and we would, my mother would sew it up. Or sometimes he would do. But I think my mother used to make some of our clothes, if I can remember rightly. But not a lot. Come to think about it, yeah, they must have done, because I don't remember going into town to buy any.
Did she have a sewing machine?
Yes, she did, because I inherited that. I used to do a lot of sewing as well. Yes, we did.
Coming back to cooking, did she cook all the meals?
Oh yes, everything. Yeah, there was no such thing as going out. There was this lamp oil shop that I was saying about before. At one stage, they did have that they started to make some like hot pots, if you will. And for people who were round about and or working, and they could order it, and they could buy these little hot pots with a crust on. How they got it, I don't know. I can't remember whether to take their own dish or what, because they'd have to do, wouldn't they? And they would make some either soup or a hot pot. I remember them doing that. Because, like, as I said, next door was a chip shop. So that was okay. We could go and get a penny fish and a penny, it was tuppence for a fish. But it was a penny worth of chips and a penny worth of peas. So we used to go and take our own little basin, a tuppenny mix, and it was a penny of the chips and a penny of the peas, and you put plenty of salt and vinegar on, and that was your supper, probably. Or some type of tea, you know. Yeah, they were happy days. They were happy days, you know. People, mine, we were all simple, I suppose. It was simple food, and we just got on with it. It was an easygoing life.
What about family activities? Did you have toys, books, games? Anything like that?
Oh, I had loads of books. Christmas, that's the only thing we asked for. Books. With all the dice games, you know, Ludo and that kind of thing. We all had that. Everybody had it. And we played cards, not for money. Nothing like that. It was begging my neighbour and all that kind of stuff, you know. With all the other games, drafts and normal stuff, but mainly for Christmas. It was always a book. Always. I mean, I got dolls and a cot, my baby doll to go into, that kind of thing. My brother, I can't remember, what did he get? We got one of the little steam engines, you know, like a steam engine. A little steam engine that he lit it somehow. And then one year he got a cinematograph so that he could show films on it. Oh yeah, oh that was fantastic, that. And they had a little billiard table. You see, as I said, we had a playroom. We were lucky, we did have a playroom. And they had this little billiard table, because it wasn't snooker then, it was billiard, little billiard table. And one time, two of my friends and one of his own friends, and we were all upstairs, and he said he was showing this film. It could have been who would it be? Not George Boone, the other one, Charlie Chaplin, probably. And he had this film going, you see, and it was probably electric. Anyway, whatever it was, and he had it fixed up on the end of his table, billiard table. And he had it fixed up, so we were sat in front, and on the wall there was a sheet, and it was this showing this film, and we were all watching this film, and suddenly this friend of mine, she went, "Oh," the gravy scream went up, what's to do? Well, he went and put light on, and the film had stopped going round the reel, and it had come across his shoulder and frightened him to death. You know, it hadn't gone round the reel. But, I mean, they were all simple. We had little parties in the backyard, and my brother, he got a magic set. But we had an old tin box, a little tin trunk, you know, the old-fashioned tin trunk. And just before the friends, half a dozen of them, four at least, would have come in the backyard, I climbed in this tin box. And he put a cover over it, and we left it partly open, so that when he did some of his tricks, I ran him in things out underneath, so he could do his tricks. We had he had a wand, and he's waving this wand down, and as he put it down to me, I had to hook these flags on the end of his wand while they came up, and he was showing these off. All these flags flew around. It just simple stuff, you know. It was all a good laugh and fantastic. We played in our workyard. It was a big workyard. And our backyard wall in the workyard, there was two halves to it. There was nothing between. One half had soft sand. The other was rough, because they had all the cement to mix, and lime and mortar. We had all the lime. We had to be very careful if we went round, it was covered over. The lime pit was covered over. And we could go up the steps, there were some steps into a, where the chimney pots were on the side, there were slates up there, and we could walk along very carefully and climb back down onto the wall and take our way along the top of this wall. And when there was a lot of sand, or halfway sand, we could jump down into the sand. But we had to be careful we didn't mix that one with the soft one. So it wasn't so bad when it was soft sand, because it was ordinary sand, but you jumped into the other one, it was all over you, you know, horrible stuff. But they used to mix the mortar in the big yard, you see. Hay mortar and all this kind of stuff. It was, I think I had a brilliant childhood, really. It was really good.
Did you have a radio or a piano?
We did eventually have a piano. My dad, he made radios. He literally fixed them up, because I remember him, he had all the table, and he had all this solder and these, had a yellow and a white kind of sticky tape, if you will, and he used to wind it round in an arc, One was yellow and one was black, and he fastened it onto a little screw with a knob on the end, and it was long and short wave. And as he twisted the knobs, they moved backwards and backwards. So that was long wave and short wave, whichever. And then he'd fix it into these parts in this radio. And one stage we had headphones, and he got Luxembourg. Well, you know, I mean, Luxembourg in those days, I mean, if you were going abroad, you went to the Isle of Man. So this was Luxembourg. Well, you know, oh, listen to this, and all this, whatever. But it was clear. He made two or three. I know he made at least two for two doctors. And some, I don't know who else, but I know he made at least three for, like, what we'd say, prominent people in those days. And one night we were all sat round, listening to me, and he had headphones, and he'd let you listen to the headphone. Then he got the idea that if you put the headphones into a basin, we could all hear. He was quite a clever man, really. And we all hear. Anyway, suddenly there's this bang bang on the middle door. When it opened, in walked a policeman. So we kind of said, "Oh," and he said, "Yes, officer, what can I do for you, lad?" He said, "Mr. Cooper, your door was open. Do you know your front door is open?" So my dad said, "Yeah." He said, "But it's now nearly 10 o'clock, half past 9 or something. It's nearly 10 o'clock, and your front door is still open. It's not very wise at this time of the night." So then he saw what he was doing. He said, "Oh, just a minute." So he went back and he shut the front door, and he came back in and he said, "Right, what's going on?" So next thing is, he has these headphones on listening to Luxembourg. You know, it was what would you say, like a friendly way to grow up. It was nice.
So you had a good relationship with your parents?
Oh, yes, yeah. Yes, I was quite ill twice when I was young, really seriously ill. I used to have a lot of sore throats, always getting cold, always having these bad sore throats, headaches, sore throats. And then eventually I was really poorly, and the doctor came and said I had scarlet fever. But my mother wouldn't let me go to hospital, so I was upstairs in the bedroom. My dad, again, he would open the door and say hello to us, you know, and then he would shut it. My mother had a coat, white coat, and a little nurse's hat that she dealt with me. My brother had to go and live next door at an auntie. My dad's brother lived next door, so he went there. So I was ill there, I don't know how long for, but it would be 2 or 3 weeks, something like that. Anyway, after I got well again, the next thing was I ended up with diphtheria. And of course in those days it was an absolute killer, you know. So this time I was downstairs in the parlour where we had a fire. Mind you, we had a fire in that bedroom, I remember, but we had a fire. So I lived for these couple of weeks. I was really, really ill, and my brother had to go and live next door again, and I didn't see my dad, apart from door would open and he'd just kind of wave and shut the door again. My mother was always there in and out, and I had my own wash basin, my own bowl of water, everything. Nothing went out of my room. Whatever was brought in was mine. Nobody else used it. And I remember my mother going to the shop. Well, she said she was going to the shop, and I had some most horrible medicine, quinine, and whatever else it was, but it was quinine, and I had to take this medicine. And of course, I'm only not that old, 6, 7, something like that, I think. And I didn't want this medicine, no way, I wasn't having it anymore, it was horrible. So she said, well, if you have this medicine, I'll go to Bagwell's toffee shop, paper shop. I'll go to Bagwell's, she said, they have a big ball in that window, big coloured ball. And if you have this medicine now, I'll go and get it for you. No, it's shut. No, it's not shut. Well, if she is, she said, I'll knock on Bagwell's door till Alice comes and opens the door and I'll buy it for you and I'll bring it you back. Will you have this? Well, anyway, eventually she persuaded me. So I took this horrible vile medicine. Well, it was quinine, I mean, in those days. It's bad enough to take now. Anyway, the next thing was, of course, she came back in. I heard her going out. I heard the door opening and shut. Then you heard the door open and shut again. Then the middle door, like a glass door, that we had a vegetable door, that went. And then she kind of must have taken her coat off, but pretended to. She came in with this big, shiny ball, all different colours it was, a beautiful, big, shiny ball. And now she said, I told you I'd get you this ball. Well, anyway, well, I was really too ill to do anything, but I threw it at the wall twice. And after that, that was it. I got laid back in bed. I didn't know anything else for a long while. I was really, really... And then suddenly I started to choke. I was choking. I don't know who it was. Somebody was patting me back. And that was the end of it. Whatever it was that was causing it, I don't know. Well, the doctor came the following morning. He was there every day. Doctor came practically every... I think he came twice a day. And he came that morning. And he came and checked me over and he said, crisis is past, he said, she'll get better now. It was just, you know, you remember these little bits of things. And while I'm improving, very slowly, there was a knock on the window one day. Must have waked me up. And I shouted. And my mother went outside to see who it was at the window. And it was the man from the grocer's shop. And he brought two Jaffa oranges. And he said, I hope I didn't startle the little lassie, but I've brought her these to help her to get better. Now, that was the kind of neighbours that you had. You know, it was, they were nice. And I always remember my mother once told the story while I was poorly. And they used to get people coming down, you see, and they'd stand in the middle of the street and they'd sing. Sometimes they were Irish fellas and they were singing away, looking for pennies, so they could go to the pub. And they were stood down the road and they were singing away and singing away. And my mother went outside and she said, just a minute, she said, will you not make a noise? Because she said, the poorly little girl here, she'd just gone asleep. Here, she said. And she gave him a penny, she said, will you quit next street? And they did. I think that is where the saying kind of came from. Oh, give him a penny, tell him to quit next street. Because half of them couldn't sing anyway. And she went out and gave them a penny each to go in next street and sing. That was another little thing that you just remember.
What about the doctor? Did you have to pay for his visits?
Yes, I would think so.
And the medicine he prescribed?
Yes, yeah. In those days, yeah. It was Dr. Gerald Mooney, and he was a hospital doctor. And eventually he came and took my tonsils out on the table at home. I had to have my tonsils out because I kept being so ill. And he said the only cure was take my tonsils out because I was so badly infected. Well, of course, mother won't let me go in hospital. That we all can't go in hospital. I mean, people died in hospital, you see. So our table, my dad had tiled it with willow pattern tiles. We used to do our own work on it. And when we'd finished writing on it and spelling, we'd whittle our fingers and rub it off. But it was a tiled top. So when the doctor saw it, he said, this table's ideal, because we had some, it was called Lysol. Lysol is like Dettol, you know. So all the tabletop was really swamped in this Lysol, and my mother had to have a sheet which was also washed in lye-soap, and that was put on this, on the table, and a pillow. I presume this pillowcase was set. And my bed was downstairs in the living room near the fire. Anyway, doctor came that morning, two doctors came, picked me up out of, off the bed, doctor, my doctor, put me on the table and said, right now, he said, like, you know, rubbing his little his hands, and he said, now, can you count? I said, yeah, God, oh, yeah, I think I was about eight. Oh, yeah, I can count. Right, I said, we'll count, shall we? Now, the other doctor had put a mask over my face, and I'm led there with this little mask on, and he's dropping chloroform, I presume, a drop at a time, you see. And, yeah, I can count, yeah. So he said, right, well, we'll start one, and I'm saying two. No, he said, I say one, you say one. And I say two, you say two. Right, three, four. I got to about eight, and I'm saying nine, no, eight. Drag back to eight, nine, 10, 11, 12, it was just gone. So when I wakened up, of course, I was back in bed, and the operation had gone on, and everything was finished with and done with. Doctor had gone home, everybody had gone home. It was only just me and my mother and my dad. So everything was finished with, and I was fine. I was fine. I remember, I think, having these bad sore throats after, you know, because it wasn't a pleasant affair, having your tonsils out. And it was quite a long time later we found out the doctor had said to my auntie, actually, as well, and he said, do they have a cat? Well, of course, we had a cat. We always had a cat. We had a big work yard. There were a lot of mice. Well, I love that cat. So, of course, I was loving it and kissing it, putting it in my doll's bed, putting it in my doll's pram, and all the dirt from the work yard was going down my throat. And that's how I come to get all these illnesses. So once we had to get rid of the cat, it went, just disappeared. I never knew where it went. And after that, I was okay. I never held another thing.
Why were people frightened of going in hospital?
I don't know. But people seemed to go in hospital and they were either dying sideways when they come out or they didn't come home. I don't know. It's just, you know, oh, they're going in hospital. It's terrible, that, going to hospital. Now, they must have been really, really, really bad when they went in hospital, because they were either, they either died when they were in hospital. I don't know. I really don't.
Tell me about coming back to your relationship with your parents. Did they ever play with you, or?
Oh, yeah, they were great. Oh, yeah, my dad used to go upstairs and tell us bedtime stories, and, oh, yeah, we'd sit on his knee and he'd tell us all kinds of rubbish, you know, stories. Oh, yeah, they were lovely. Yeah, really, really good parents, you know, they looked after us, and I can't say that we got everything we wanted, but we were well looked after. Oh, yes, we really were. And we had holidays, we used to go to the... Went to Blackpool. I remember going three times to Blackpool for the week. Oh, going for the week to Blackpool. You know, they were wonderful. Yeah, all my uncles and my aunties and my grandma and granddad, they were always, used to go down to me, which just lived up Hillside Road. As I say, we moved into their house in Paradise Street. They moved down to Frenchwood. So we used to say, we're going down Walton, my brother and me. Walton's over the bridge, but anyway, it was far enough. And my grandma used to have little bags of toffees waiting for us, and sometimes there'd be pennies in, and once or twice we'd have a threepenny bit in it. Whoa, you know, what, threepenny bit was flipping out, we were well off, weren't we? And we used to go and play in their garden. They had a big garden, and they had pigeons and hens. My granddad had all these pigeons, and he cups, umpteen size, different kind of cups and medals his pigeons had won, you know. And we used to go down and did apple trees and a pear tree, gooseberries, blackberries, and we used to go and help ourselves, you know, pick them up. Oh, they were lovely. They were a really good family. Really, they were a really, really good family. All my aunties and uncles, they were all the same, and they'd play with you. And my auntie Florence, she married Jack Giovanni, dance band leader. Bit before your time.
Is that Jack Giovanni who had a shop in Walden Street?
Yes.
Well, I knew him and his wife very well.
Oh, well, this was his first wife.
Oh, right.
This is his first wife.
Right.
My auntie Florrie, because she was a Cooper, of course, and she married him. She had two sons, Jack and Michael.
Okay.
Yeah.
What about celebrating events, you know, sort of Christmas, bonfire night, Easter? Do you have any special recollections of celebrating events, you know, festivities?
Well, bonfire night, my uncle used to live next door and another uncle had come. And we had all these fireworks in the backyard, in the big workyard. And of course, in those days, there were little simple things like flip-flaps, little bangers, little flip-flaps. And you used to light these, you see, and then pretend. You'd drop them on the floor, and a pair of them would be jumping up and down. My dad and my uncle, and they'd be shouting, "Oh, oh, oh, ow, he's getting me, ow!" And they'd be jumping up and down where these flip-flaps were. And of course, us kids thought the flip-flaps were chasing them. And we were absolutely hysterics. It was real good fun, you know. We had little volcanoes and Roman candles, not as big as they are today. Nothing like they are now. But we always, oh yeah, we always celebrated. Oh yeah, and Christmas, we had some wonderful Christmases. We had get-togethers, mainly, I remember one big one that we had with my grandma's. I think it must have been their golden wedding. And we had this great big do down there. And my auntie, she had a lovely singing voice, and they had a piano, always playing the piano, and all these songs were coming out. One of them played the squeeze box, you know, and another one had the banjo, and everybody did something. They all had to get up and do a party piece, you know. I had a fantastic childhood, really, you know.
What about festivals such as Easter and Whitsun? Did you go on any of the religious walks?
Oh, we always went down the park. Oh, yeah, at Whitsuntide. Oh, yes, I walked in practically every one that they had. So, you know, from being the age that you could walk right up to them finishing. Oh, yes, we walked in all of them.
Who for? Who with?
Oh, St. Augustine's. Born and bred in St. Augustine's. You know, married there, hope to die here, that kind of thing. Oh, yeah, it was wonderful. Oh, yes.
Was it a big event?
Oh.
The Whit Walks, were they a very big
event?
Oh,
yeah, the whole town, it shut down. Nobody could get in or out. You had to come in at a certain time of the morning, or you had to wait then for the rest of the day. You couldn't get in because the Church of England, what we would say the Protestants, had the morning. They walked first thing. No, we walked in the morning. We walked in the morning, and the Church of England walked in the afternoon. And they came from all the town walked, and we all met up at certain places. And oh yes, it was literally we used to come from St. Augustine's, along past St. Augustine's Church, down into Avenham Lane, and came and started off from bottom of Avenham Lane up. What's that? Main Street, right at the bottom of Avenham Lane. By the park. You know the park gates? Well, there is no gates. Park. Red Park. We were just talking about it. Piece that belongs to Preston. It was in the paper the other day. Somebody was trying to buy it. Doesn't belong to anybody. It belongs to Preston. You can't buy it. We used to walk along Avenham Lane and come up around by the park. Straight up into town. And then walk up into town. Go down.
Up Winkley Street?
Yes. Yeah, around Winkley Square. Walk down towards, where did we get to down there? We used to go on, we used to double back somewhere, walk right round the other end of town. Walking a good couple of hours.
Did lots of people participate?
Oh yes, all the schools and churches, whatever your school or church was. Like, if I say like all the Catholic schools and churches, everybody joined in, and they carried the statues, and we were all the bands, everything. It was fantastic. It was a fantastic day. In the afternoon, it was the Church of England. They walked in the afternoons. And they, it was the one that had the big banner, Orange Club. The Orange Club. Oh, yes. And they had this big banner, you see, and they always had their horse with a boy on it, King Billy. And, you know, and the, today, things are not half, nothing like they were then. And they used to walk down, and this fellow with the big flag, and he used to swing it along the ground and up and back again, you know, and then he'd walk along with this great big flag in front of him. And you could hear him out different, and then somebody shout things like, "Go on, Harry, give us a wave," and he'd sweep the floor with it, and back, make this big arc with it, and everybody would clap, you know, and he'd be walking round. I'm not sure if they did all the walk that we did, but they certainly used to walk through the town centre, and sometimes, you know, and there was a lot of bigotry going on. And that sometimes somebody would shout, "Go on, Billy," or "Harry," whatever his name was, "sweep Catholics out of your path." And that was the idea. Keep the Catholics out of the path.
So was there a lot of, you know, religious tension or bigotry?
There was a certain like that time of the day, yes. On that particular day there was. But the police were always around, so they kind of calmed it down a bit, but you know, sometimes you think, well, it was all a bit of a lark, you know, and because I mean, the other half of the street were big Catholics waiting for a Catholic procession to go. You can imagine you're not going backwards and forwards between them, you know, and because I mean, we were too young to know all this. We didn't know about this, but it was a fantastic time. Oh, it was wonderful to walk in those whip processions. Oh yes. Yeah, we walked in the last guild one, and that was great. The last guild present was wonderful. When's the next one?
Oh, you'll still be
is
around.
20?
2012.
12? Oh, well, we're now 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, another 5 years yet to go. I said, push me in a wheelchair, get me there.
So it was certainly part of the you know, the religious culture in Preston.
Oh yes, a big part. Every church joined in. Everyone. They were all there.
I'll come to that in a little bit. Tell me about, you said about going on holiday to Blackpool 3 times.
Oh, I know.
In a year, was that?
Oh no, we were only once a year. No, we went to Blackpool and we stayed on one of the, can't remember the name of the road now. I could have done Euston Street, Euston Road. Anyway, down there, and we took our own food and we handed it in, and the people in the boarding house cooked it for you. You give them eggs, so we'd have, say, boiled eggs for breakfast, and they would bring them to your table, and we had a little cupboard. Everybody had a little cupboard next to your table, and you put all your stuff in there, your tea and your sugar and your, so you literally took all your food with you, and they cooked it for you. But of course you slept in the those beds, they used the bedrooms, and it was wonderful because you were out every day, down on the sands, having a donkey ride, walking along the front. There was a lot of, what would I say, stalls, sideshows, all along the prom, what they call the Golden Mile now. There was all these sideshows down there. The Bearded Lady was one, and there was a fat man. Well, I mean, you can see them today anyway, but not in those days. There were all kinds of things going on. And one of them was a stand, and they had a piano. And what was his name? Stedman. It's a well-known name anyway, and you could buy a book, or you could buy sheet music with all the popular songs in it. And they play and on the little stage there was a big sheet that dropped down, and the words that had been written on, you know, big letters on this sheet, and everybody learned this pop song, Top of the Pops, and that was the song that you were singing, and all these loads of people all stood, no matter what the weather, they stood there, and these people would be playing piano, perhaps a banjo, and we learnt the songs that were up there, and then you could buy sheet music to take home, which people did, because a lot of folk had pianos, and so you'd buy all these different pieces of music, and then sometimes you could buy a little book, probably be about sixpence, maybe a shilling, for a book of songs. And that was one of the highlights of your week, you know, seeing all this, you know. And I think we had candy floss in those days. I know we had ice creams, and of course we're always watching them make rock. One of the houses, one of this boarding house, I'm sure we went there at least twice, same boarding house, behind us, there was a rock-making factory. And we could stay in our bedroom, look through the window and watch them, when they came to this end of the workplace, rolling the rock, making these long strips of rock. And we could watch it from our bedroom window, you know. It was fabulous. We had fun there. It was simple fun. You know, we could go in the sea. The sea was lovely and clean. And we went and splashed around in the sea and made sandcastles and just sat there, and there was you could buy cups of tea, and you could buy cockles from all these stalls, ice cream stalls, and cockles and mussels and whelks. I never fancied whelks. They looked horrible. But cockles and shrimps, yeah, and we'd sit there on the beach and enjoy them. And Punch and Judy. Yeah, Punch and Judy on there, apart from the donkeys. They were happy times. And there was no, what would I say, nobody to disturb you. You know, and sometimes you'd get little groups going past playing banjos and all, and little groups and singing, and or they'd stand on the top of the prom, groups of them, and they'd stand there and they'd have a banjo and sometimes little concertinas. And they're all boys and girls, teenagers. They'd all be singing all these latest songs that we'd just learned from this thing. Feldman's, that was the name of the book. Feldman's, yeah. Nice, it was nice, happy days.
How did you travel to Blackpool, by train?
Yes, we went on the train. Which was great, yeah. We always went on the train. It was wonderful. And the place used to be absolutely full.
When did you go to Preston Wakes?
Preston Wake, yes. Oh, yes. Preston Holidays.
When was that?
August. I think it was the first week in August. Because it was always the week that we had to go to Mass during the week. It always came up, as we would say, it was a holiday of obligation. It was usually during that week that we had to go to Mass, that we had our holidays. Strange enough. And we went. Oh, and of course, we didn't eat meat on Fridays. So we always had to say, you know, we would get fish and they would cook the fish for us. And then, of course, over the while, then we would go and we'd just say to him, we don't want meat today. We'll have fish today. But people then, I mean, they understood. And most of the time, nobody in the hotel or boarding house would have meat. Mainly, everybody would have fish. Regardless of what your religion was, it would be fish. So nobody was bothered which way they headed.
Can you remember how much it cost to stay there?
No idea. I don't think it would have been that much. No idea.
Okay, then.
Do you want to stop that?